I will call the remote hearing of the Local Government Division to order. Today is March 16th, 2022. This meeting is being held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. If our clerk will take the attendance, please.
Good morning, Representative Mason.
Good morning, Josh. Present.
Gotcha. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Byrd.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Mecklen.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Joachim. Representative Joachim. And I see Representative Joachim just entered the waiting room, so all members are present.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Wednesday, March 9th, 2022. Representative Quam, would you move the minutes?
I would so move.
Thank you. Are there any corrections or discussion? If everyone would unmute, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. The minutes stand approved. Thank you so much. And I do want to remind everyone that if you want the agenda and all the written testimony to go to the committee website, and you'll find all the documents there. The first bill we have for consideration today is House File 3992. And this bill was referred to our committee by the chair of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. And hopefully we can get through this before 9 o'clock. And I will move that House File 3992 be recommended to be re-referred to State Government Finance and Elections Committee. Representative Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 3992 is an agency bill from the Metropolitan Council, and it relates to the allocations for parks funding. You will see some date changes and some other changes in existing statute, and we have capable staff here from the Metropolitan Council to explain the bill.
Thank you. And I see that Lisa Barajas is present to testify. Am I close?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. You got it. Good morning, Committee. Madam Chair, I'm Lisa Barajas, Executive Director of Community Development at the Metropolitan Council. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for sponsoring this bill. It is an administrative change in that we're proposing here in statutes. This is the process within this section of statute that identifies the timelines by which staff at the Metropolitan Council are required to review expenses related to operations and maintenance funding for distribution of those funds from the state to the parks agencies. So just as a brief reminder, we have 10 regional parks implementing agencies, and they receive an appropriation from the state to support the operations and maintenance of the regional park system. In statute here, we are right now required to review the previous year's expenses from implementing agencies by July 1st of each year. And then we must review all those submissions by July 15th, which is a very short turnaround for our very large system. Our park system is about 55,000 acres. This may have made sense when our system was much smaller than it is today, but reviewing those expenses from the 10 agencies in less than 2 weeks is a pretty quick turnaround, and then we must turn around 2 weeks later and make those payments and distributions to the agencies by August 1st. So our proposal is to change what we're reviewing from not the previous year's expenses, but the most recently audited financial statements. This gives us surety in what we're reviewing and accuracy in the expense reports to ensure that we're not spending a lot of time reviewing duplicates or things that don't aren't, you know, got mistakenly mixed in with the regional parks expenses. And then we propose moving up the date by which agencies must submit those audited reports. Because this would be from the most recently audited financial statement, it is likely to be from 2 years prior rather than the most recent year. Most agencies are not going to have their most recent year's expenses audited by that time frame. That would be unrealistic, but that would put us all on the same footing with all of the agencies and with a level of accuracy that's needed to ensure that the distribution of payments is also accurate. I'm happy to stand for any additional questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions? I see Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And would the author be able to tell us the last time that there has been a legislative auditor audit of, that would be covering or overlapping with what's being discussed today?
Madam Chair?
Oh, Representative Hansen, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair and Representative Kwan, are you speaking of a program evaluation or the ongoing financial audits?
Okay, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought it'd be good for the committee to, it's just talking about their audits, and it'd be just nice that the committee would know what the recent ones were, and verification that there were or were not any recommendations to approve the internal audits.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Kwan, I believe that there hasn't been a program evaluation on the metropolitan parks recently, and by recently I mean at least in the last 20 years. I could be wrong on that. However, the financial audits, the financial audits, the legislative auditor reviews, I think it's on a three-year cycle. Various state agencies and Met Council would be in that circle of audits. And to my knowledge, I do not remember, maybe Ms. Barajas would know, but I don't believe there were any negative findings relating to this with any of the financial audits recently, or they would have stuck in my mind.
Ms. Barajas?
Madam Chair, Representative Kwan, and committee members, that's correct. We did have an audit conducted by the Office of the Legislative Auditor on our state and regional bonding programs for the regional park system in the mid-2010s. At some point, I'm sorry, the year escapes me, but it probably a little bit more than 5 years ago now at this point. It did not cover the O&M to my knowledge, operations and maintenance distribution to my knowledge. We act as a fiscal agent passing through these dollars, so it's a pretty straightforward process. We do conduct within the council and have our own audit committee and do conduct program evaluation. This was one of the items that we found ourselves that would really increase our own accuracy. So trying to, improve the program ahead of any sort of negative finding from an outside audit group is, I think, what we're always trying to do in our processes.
Thank you. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, as a policy, I think it's nice to make sure when the agency is redoing something that is related to audits, to verify that there aren't any recommendations out there, and that helps explain maybe why they did. So this was just a internal, let's go ahead and refresh stuff. So thank you, Madam Chair.
And are there any further questions or comments about the bill? I'm not seeing any hands at this point. Representative Hansen, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd ask for your support.
Thank you very much. And I will renew my motion then that House File 3992 be re-referred to State Government Finance and Elections Committee. And Josh, if you will take the roll, please.
Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Representative Kwan.
Aye.
Representative Berg.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative McMahon.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
Aye.
We have 9 ayes.
Thank you very much. The motion prevails, and Representative Hansen, you are on your way. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Next, we have 2 bills that are up for consideration. There's Representative Hewitt's bills. It's House File 4108 and House File 4109. And as announced, these will today will be for informational purposes and will be laid over, no action taken. Representative Hewitt, to your bills, please.
Thank you, and good morning, Madam Chair and members. Members, before you are 2 bills related to local government annexation powers, House File 4108 and House File 4109. In a few minutes, you will hear from officials from the Minnesota Association of Townships who will explain the details of the bill and why these proposals are necessary. As you're hearing the testimony, I think it's important to realize several things. First, these bills are pro-township and pro-city. While this legislation is being brought forward by townships, I believe that this legislation will also benefit cities. It will create more partnerships between cities and townships, and the proposal on an orderly annexation agreement will prevent cities from fighting with each other over annexation parcels of township property. Second, the legislation is about fairness and balance. Fairness for the individual property owner and balance between 2 local units of government. Finally, members, I want you to know that some of us in this committee have participated in recent stakeholder meetings between the cities and townships. It was disappointing to see that some stakeholders don't believe the current situation warrants change. In the state law, the fact is that the status quo simply does not work for everyone, and the stakeholders can't find compromise, then perhaps we should look out for individual property owners and consider giving some guidance here today. With that, Madam Chair, I'd like to hand over to Mr. Fenske and the other, and then to Mr. Kruger. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Fenske, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Steve Fenske with the Minnesota Association of Townships. First of all, thank you for the hearing. We appreciate that. And Representative Hewitt and Representative Meekland before him for both working on this bill with us and for participating in the stakeholder meetings that we've been having. Annexation is a common, frequent issue for townships. For those who don't know, annexation is the process of moving property from a township into a city. And it's a permanent approach. It's intended to bring property into the city. The townships don't oppose that idea. If some criteria are present, for example, if there was need for city services, that would be probably a good annexation. If there was going to be development into a city use, whether that's residential or commercial or something that you typically see in urban development. And if the landowners want to go, those would be bases that the townships are sad to see property leave, but we would understand. And our approaches to this have tried to accommodate that and base any annexation on one of those criteria. And that's what the bills before you do. For some background, right now, annexation works in a process of either annexation by ordinance, which is the city just deciding to take property. And that's actually 7 different powers. It's not just one. There's 7 different powers, and that's why these bills reference several of those powers. The other method of annexation is annexation by contract, or what's called orderly annexation. A lot of annexations happen by contract. They come to some agreement and they move property. It's generally not contested. But be aware that right now, townships have really no opportunity to object to any annexation. Of those seven that I mentioned, in statute, there's only an opportunity to object to one of the seven, and it's not one that's commonly used. So townships don't have a chance to even when they dislike something, they don't have the opportunity to say, hey, we don't want this to happen for these reasons, nor do landowners. That's what we're trying to address with these bills. House File 4108 does a couple of things. First of all, it shifts this away from decisions by townships or cities by creating, or I should say restoring, an annexation election. That was the means by which most annexations were done before we have the current set of laws. Okay, this is, I believe, the mid-90s at that time. And before then, landowners got a vote on whether they were going to be annexed. Now, if they wanted to go, that would be waived. And in the bill that you have in 4108, if the landowners all want to go and certain criteria met, they still get to. So this bill does not touch the primary means by which cities do annexation by ordinance. It doesn't take something from them on the primary way that they do that, because the landowners want to go and because the city services are needed. Again, we've tried to respect the city's needs in these bills. It also changes orderly annexation statutes in a small way, but significant way. Right now, a township and a city could make an agreement about annexation and they could plan for the future of certain properties. But if the township borders a second city, that second city could come in and take the property that the township in the other city have currently agreed to how they're going to manage it. That's caused problems for townships. It's, again, it doesn't happen a lot because there's just not a lot of townships that touch more than one city. But when they plan that way and when they go to the trouble of making these agreements, we think they should be honored. This bill would say that once there's an agreement, the parties, their agreement is binding and the third party can't step in unilaterally. And unilaterally is a key word because the township and city in the agreement could still work with that other party and let them in. And that does happen in some places where a non-party asks to come into the agreement or asks to annex property that's already subject to that contract. The rest of that bill is kind of procedural changes related to the effects. So things like roads. Well, when you have a road and it was within the city, but now it's going to be on the border, we have to change the status of that. Things like that. If there was a reimbursement payment owed from the city to the township, that can change. There's also a change to detachment. Detachment is the reverse of annexation, process of moving property from the city back into the township. And that's the other piece of this is, if there's not development after some amount of time, townships ask the question, why is the property staying in the city? And if right now only the city or the landowner could move property back into the township, this would try to start addressing that and allow property to move back into townships. And it then ends a reimbursement if any were owed on something like that. Madam Chair, is 4109 up as well right now? Would you like me to talk about that as well? Okay, thank you. 4109 deals more focused with orderly annexation. It does the same things I just talked about. Again, orderly annexation is annexation by contract. And it says that if there's an agreement, we're going to respect that agreement among the parties. In both of these, it has a provision that the agreement can only last for 10 years, and then it would have to be renewed. There's notice provisions to any other city in the area so that they those other cities get a chance to negotiate. It could be a multi-party agreement if they want to. It doesn't have to just be two. And it also does one other thing in particular. It's to remove one of the annexation by ordinance powers, what we call the 60-40. So it's this law says that if a property is 60% bordered by the city and it's 40 acres or less, the city can take that property. And it has nothing to do with whether or not the landowner wants it into the city, whether it needs city services, or whether it's about to be developed. The city just gets to take it. That one is troubling for townships. It doesn't happen often, but when it happens, it's very controversial because there's not a need for that annexation. And Representative Mason, I'll leave it there for now. I believe Jeff Krieger, our executive director, would like to talk on these a little bit as well.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Krieger, identify yourself, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for holding this hearing for us so we can talk about this. And I, too, want to express my thanks to Representative Hewitt and Mecklen for pushing forward Mecklen's initial bill and then Representative Hewitt's 4108 and 4109. I want to first address what Steve Fenske had talked about with how this change occurred. And I do have some notes on that. They actually did occur back in 1992. And where prior to that, townships did have the right to vote, and property owners did have the right to vote on whether or not they were going to be part of the city, part of the township. And what had happened that the coalition and the league lobbied to try and get that changed, and of course they succeeded. And it says this repeal that did not occur as a result of a direct annexation bill. And that actually had been defeated earlier in the session. And but as a result of a last-minute amendment added to the year's tax bill, after a similar amendment had been earlier been rejected in conference committee, they were able to get it pushed through. So what we're finding out in outstate Minnesota and so forth, that there are a lot of areas that cities are essentially what we call land grabs, doing land grabs, and where they're not offering services, they're not bringing in water, sewer, or improving the land at all. They're just grabbing the land. And Steve Fenske had said that if it's going to be part of development, so forth, yeah, it makes sense. And again, we're not opposed to annexation. And said, so we know it's going to happen. We know that we're the ones who have land. But it's just how it goes about getting done. And as the city and the league and the coalition will admit to, and they did at the last stakeholders meeting, that most of the process is amicable. But there are areas where it's not. And they have data and they actually have it in front of them. I apologize, but over the last 5 years, I think every year there's only been like four or five contested annexations on a yearly basis. And that's part of their claim as to why this process is working. We think it's not working based on the same data, because it shows that there is they'll have the exact numbers, but I think it's around 300 or so early annexations that were done, and roughly the same number that were done by ordinance or annexation by ordinance. My theory on that, or my opinion on that, is the fact that if it was so amicable, why wasn't it all done by early annexation? And why did the city just have to take it? Now, when you talk about the contested part, there's only four or five times that it was actually contested. I bring you back to an article that was stated in the Star Tribune back in 2003. And this is when property was being taken from Chisago City and also Monticello. And this dealt with Wyoming Township and Monticello Township. At that time, when it was happening, the little part in here talked about, so they were fighting it. There's over 11,000 acres in each area that was going to be annexed, or that was trying to be annexed. The commissioners of the county didn't even want this to happen. But so both townships were fighting this. And it says in here that both townships said that fighting this was going to cost each of them over $175,000 each. Now, I'm also a township officer in Newmarket Township in Scott County. We're the 14th largest township in the state. Our levy this year was, I think it was about $850,000. Can you imagine if we're going to try and spend $175,000 to $200,000 to fight annexation, we're not going to do it. That's why the annexations are not contested. Plus, as Steve Fenske had testified, most of the time, township cannot object. We don't have that option. And so we do strongly support either one of these bills that help at least give us some type of fairness back in this process. And again, this happened back in 1992. It was a legislative action that created what's happening right now. And so it's going to take a legislative solution in order to fix it. Us, our two sides talking, it hasn't worked in 30 years. It's not going to work now. So we need to have some type of action by our legislature to make this more fair. And I know we can do it, but we just need to have our legislators work for us. And I know we do have also a township officer that has a testimony. Vance Bachman can have more personal testimony on that as well. And I'll end there. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman, if you would identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Vance Bachman from District 9, MAD Director District 9 in West Central Minnesota. I'm going to actually a county unit meeting where some of this gets talked about, but I wanted to bring this testimony to you, and thank you, Representative Hewitt, for putting these bills out there. Annexation by letting the people work on this is going to be a huge thing, like it was before. We have had multiple instances in my district where we've had cities and towns, small towns, where they want to annex properties. They can do that right now by ordinance and take this out of the hands of the townships. We want, after close review of a lot of that stuff, a lot of the residents don't know that their property taxes will increase, that they will be subjected to increases over time and possibly loss of some of their services that may right now be a priority for the township or town or township or the maintenance group. So what we're seeing out there is we want to have responsible annexation by way of votes, by way of townships working together with the towns and that stuff. Again, I want to support our MAD director, Jeff Kruger, and also our general counsel, Steve Fenske, in saying that we support this by votes of the people and by votes of the township. Put it back in the hands of the people out there. I've seen this countless times through multiple different towns in my district where that does go to the people, and the people write petitions back to the city saying, please do not annex us in. We do not want this. We want it to be fair for the people out there and fair for the towns and the townships involved. So that's just some of the stuff out there. I think you can see representation from Jeff Kruger and that stuff also, that it does cost a lot of money to get into these legal battles, and we don't want to get into those legal battles. We want to make sure that it's nice and fluid, so we don't even have five of them. We want to make sure that the people have representation and it comes through them. So thank you, Madam Chair, for us hearing today. And thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing these two bills to the attention. And hopefully we can get some traction forward to move this into fair representation for all parties.
Thank you. Are you able to stay for questions?
I am.
Okay. Then next, I'd like to hear from Craig Johnson, League of Minnesota Cities. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities and appreciate the opportunity to comment at this informational hearing on House Files 4108 and 4109. We'll start by making it clear that the League respectfully opposes both bills and all of the sections in both bills, and that we would also respectfully disagree with the author that these are pro-city. They strictly take away authorities from cities and force cities to take specific actions. I want to start with a quick snapshot of annexation history, because you heard a lot about that in the recent testimony. This is a very complicated set of law. There's a reason you don't hear it discussed frequently at the legislature. It's because there are literally two units of local government, both of which are completely legitimately trying to do their work to manage lands within their borders. And in some cases, we have mutually inconsolable differences on those uses and on who should be in charge of them. And so it gets very complicated, and it can have very significant direct and unintended impacts on economic development, on growth, on agricultural practices in an area, a lot of things of that nature. We have had two processes initiated by the legislature in the past that lasted for an entire interim. One was moderated by the past chief administrative law judge in charge of boundary adjustments. The other was moderated, was actually mediated by the head of alternative dispute resolutions at that time, the Hamlin School of Law. And both of those processes ended up with reports coming back to the legislature that said there were no agreeable solutions to these problems that could be reached during those discussions. Those were discussions of actual city staff and elected folks and township elected folks with folks from the statewide associations involved as well. We have also gone through an over 2-year process with the chief administrative law judge a couple of years ago and the staff of the Office of Administrative Hearings. And that was just trying to look at procedural and technical changes that the Office of Administrative Hearings wanted to make annexation law clearer and fix the process for when they have to make rulings on boundary adjustments. And that process also resulted in no bill coming forward because at the last meeting, the townships decided they were not willing to support a package that did not include some of the things you see in front of you today. The basis for this comes down to the role local governments have. And if you look both in annexation law and in land use planning law, cities are designated as the appropriate level of government to handle development that is urban and suburban in nature, and that includes condensed or intensive residential, commercial, industrial, or governmental uses of property. And so cities are tasked with developing and growing and doing these things. That's where the economic development is theoretically happening that is not agricultural based in this state. And to do that, occasionally need more space to do that in, which is what annexation is about, is getting the resources available for the economic development and growth that cities are planning. The conflict comes when someone else's interests are in the way of that, and that's what you're hearing, you know, discussed today. The statement that was made about this being an issue that we would say does not have urgency, that is absolutely true. Cities do not feel there is an urgency on this issue. It has not been the case that there are 4 or 5 contested annexations every year that go to the chief law judge for a decision or go to court for a decision. In the past 5 years, there have been 2 cases total that have had to go to the courts for a final decision in a contested annexation. The rest, some go to court over how they have been resolved. And we'll get into one of those very briefly here in a moment. But in the last 5 years, just for perspective, there have been a total of 665 annexations in this state. That's of every kind there is. And Madam Chair, I will not go through what all of those are. We did that a couple of years ago here with the Office of Administrative Hearings, and we'll save that annexation lesson for maybe another day. But the key of that is that about 40% of them, 278 of those, were orderly annexations, which means the township and the city and the property owners reached an agreement, signed a contract on how the future development of an area will occur, and that's in place. That is what you heard townships saying they prefer. It is very strongly what cities prefer. It can be a very efficient way for doing planning, especially if there's multiple properties involved and it's going to be phased in over time as a development rather than, you know, a single parcel coming at one time. So we do like to see orderly annexations where those work. And obviously when communication is working well between all of the parties, those are much more achievable. When that breaks down, when people start digging in and having other demands, that's when orderly annexations can be very difficult to reach. But that doesn't change the need for a property owner to try to get what the development they want on their property, or for a city to extend their services or extend their economic development plans. That can't just wait for 10 years while people decide how they want to keep talking. Sometimes there's an urgency to getting that completed. During that same time, 321 annexations were done under what the very broad category of annexation by ordinance. There are actually six categories under that. One of the subdivisions in that was repealed. So there are six uses of annexation by ordinance. I would add they are not all cities claiming property should be moved into the city. Two of those six involve property owner petitions where they are asked to have their property moved into a city. So annexation by ordinance is not just cities asking to have property added in. It is also property owners asking to be added to a city. And if their parcel is 120 acres or less, or is in a township but has been platted and is also a small size plat under 200 acres, they have that option to petition to go into the city rather than go through the negotiations and contract work of going through an orderly annexation agreement. It's a streamlined process for those simpler cases, typically simpler cases. The other types of annexation that have occurred, I'm not going to go through all the numbers on, Madam Chair. I can certainly provide that to the committee. It was very simple to get. We asked the Office of Administrative Hearings for their record of dockets that they have heard. I would point out that under those types of annexation by ordinance, two of those, not one, but two, townships can file objections to. Of those two types of annexations in the past 5 years, 27 were the 40 acre and less 60% surrounded ones that you heard Mr. Fenske refer to. There were only four objections filed by townships to those, and they are allowed to object to them. It was all by the same township and over the same area of annexation that was going on. And all four were withdrawn by the township. A settlement was reached on them. So that's the extent townships have objected to that piece of authority that they are claiming is so contentious. The other area that they have the ability to object to, they have not filed an objection to. There has been no township that opposed any property owner petition under subdivision 5 of subdivision or of 414.033. So those two areas can be objected to by townships, and townships don't object to them. So we do understand that there are contentious cases where a township and a city and a property owner may be very, very much convinced that they cannot agree on how it got resolved because there are mutually disagreeable issues at hand. But that's why the Office of Administrative Hearings handles these and has to make a judge makes a ruling in those cases. The legislation in front of you, I'd like to just go into briefly, Madam Chair. The two bills.
Madam Chair.
Can't hear briefly. You, ma'am. Madam Chair, I did not hear what you were trying to say. You're on mute.
Okay, are you almost finished?
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to just give a quick summary of the stuff in the bills that was just covered by townships. Thank you. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, in 4108 and 4109 in front of you, the bills are identical except 4108 adds the new annexation election process that was mentioned. 4109 does not add that, but instead removes two city authorities to respond to property that is either completely surrounded by the city or is 60% surrounded by the city and smaller than a 40-acre parcel. The major issue that is in both of these bills and in the other bills townships have introduced this session deals with orderly annexations and their exclusivity. Tries to say that if a township and a city file an orderly annexation contract, even if that contract says that the town and the city will not perform any annexations, it prevents any other city that abuts that township from doing an annexation for the affected area. And it prohibits any property owner who lives in that area from applying to get annexed into a city through petition. The only option they would have is to get all the involved cities and townships to change their orderly annexation agreement to let them do that. So we do not feel that this is a bill, that these bills help either city authorities with annexation or property owners, that they actually restrict property owner rights in many of those cases. The township authority that they are asking for detachment does the same thing. Property owners can already detach by petition if they wish to. If they can show that they have met the criteria, it's a very inexpensive process. And we've had 44 of those recently that have been successfully filed by property owners. What we would have in this case is townships deciding the property owner didn't develop their land fast enough, and now they're going to force that property back into the township. And we do not believe that's good either for economic development or for the property owner's rights in that case. Madam Chair, I'm happy to be available for questions, with that, we'll pass it back to you for further guidance. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to finish with the testifiers first. Next,
Madam Chair.
Mr. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That extensive testimony, I would like to try and clarify a few things before we move on.
There's only two more people, and
Madam Chair, while it's fresh, because I was confused by some statements made by the person that just testified.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I heard the statement that on this bill that the cities need to control and plan, et cetera, within their boundaries. Annexation, by definition, the topic is outside the boundary of the city. So I'm trying to understand what the testifier was trying to say, or if cities actually believe any land that's touching them is within their purview to decide what's being done.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative, if I said within their boundaries, that was not intentional. Cities are responsible for planning their operations within city boundaries, but also are responsible for planning how growth and development will occur. And if that involves moving or extending their boundaries to be able to do that, they need to be involved in the planning to do that, because it involves extending roads, sewers, stormwater, wastewater, drinking water, potentially other municipal utilities like electric or gas, all variety of things need to be planned into that. And state planning law does have a 2-mile radius around cities where cities are able to extend their planning authority if they need to. So that's how it works right now, Madam Chair and Representative.
Thank you. Representative Kwan, do you have a response?
Well, just that I wanted to clarify some of that, plus it, frankly, is a good example of the pompous attitude of some entities that they automatically feel it's under their domain and their right, and they just do it. And I'll get on to that line after the next testifiers are done.
Okay, thank you. Kelsey Clem, if you would identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I'm Kelsey Clem, the city administrator in Detroit Lakes. And I'm testifying on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, where I also serve as co-chair of the Land Use Committee. Today, I'm testifying against House File 4108 and 4109 because they would wreak havoc on Minnesota's annexation system, which plays an essential role in fostering economic development, housing growth, and environmental protections to good land use planning. For example, Detroit Lakes has annexed property and extended water and sewer around both Little and Big Detroit Lakes, and Long Lake, where there were poor areas of poor water quality and failing septic systems. These projects were possible because we were able to utilize the existing annexation rules that are in place. Cities, by their very definition, are better situated to serve areas that are or are becoming more urban. Cities provide the services that make our communities livable, ranging from municipal water and sewer, to police services, to economic development, to libraries, community centers, parks, trails, and other amenities. It only makes sense that residents who enjoy these benefits also help pay for them through property taxes. We are concerned that the changes proposed in this legislation would make annexation more difficult, more expensive, and potentially unavailable in some situations. For example, we've already covered this, but the proposal would remove the ability of cities to annex land by ordinance that is 60% or more, or completely surrounded by other municipal land. Without this ability, a city could end up with a patchwork of properties that are not within the city, which would create great inefficiencies with infrastructure extension and service delivery. Understandingly, property owners who are on the edge of the city or who become surrounded by the city are not usually in favor of paying for these services that they've been receiving for free. But this is not sustainable for cities around rural Minnesota. And just want to point out, even annexation by ordinance does require notification and a public hearing. And the city council gets to hear from those residents before that annexation takes place. These residents work at jobs in the city, go to healthcare in the city, shop in the city, receive emergency services from the city, drive on city streets, and recreate in our city. And they also need to help pay for those services. We are also concerned about the proposed changes to orderly annexation law. Our city has made good use of orderly annexation agreements, but they can be difficult to negotiate, and they can take a long term to develop. As I mentioned, those examples about going around the lake, in those instances, those annexation agreements were in excess of 10 years. So forcing a term of 10 years or less makes it harder for cities to engage in long-term development of infrastructure. An election could change the terms of an agreement. These issues are not easy, and that's why the legislature has typically made changes to annexation laws only when the city and township groups can work out an agreement. Simply put, these proposals would have a chilling effect on the ability for both small cities and regional cities in greater Minnesota alike to grow, develop, and prosper. We respectfully request that you oppose these bills and that any changes proposed to annexation and detachment laws be worked out between the city and township organizations. Thank you.
Madam Chair, you're muted.
Mr. O'Rourke, if you would identify yourself for the record, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I am here on behalf of Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We represent the municipalities and cities in the state of Minnesota that have populations under 5,000. There are approximately 705 such cities across the state of Minnesota. We are here today in opposition to both 4108 and 4109. Specifically, in addition to all the points that were covered by Mr. Clem and Mr. Johnson, we have strong concerns about the detachment provisions. These are provisions that would allow townships to reclaim or annex back into townships undeveloped land or land that is currently in municipalities in many of our small cities. These can have significant effects on our small cities, detrimental and adverse to the planning of the cities. And while the five-year window that is in statute that is being proposed in these bills, this could go back as far as land that has been in the cities over 20 years, or simply just waits until that five-year mark happens before a township would try to detach it. I also would like to raise a point that apparently there have been meetings among stakeholders. I am disappointed to find that out, given that the Minnesota Association of Small Cities has not been invited or participated in any of these such meetings. This is especially disappointing because we have been trying and have a history of working closely with our township counterparts on other legislative issues. So to be excluded from annexation discussions is especially disappointing, as this is a serious and major issue for many of our city members. We would urge the committee to take no action. I know this is an informal hearing, but we feel that the existing statutes are working for a lot of our communities. And if there is going to be any proposed changes, that a true meeting of all stakeholders actually take place before putting forth such legislation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I am not seeing anyone else that wants to testify. So questions for members, and I guess I'll go. I saw Representative Quam. Did you want to, did you have another question? And then Representative Meekland.
Madam Chair, I thought Representative Meekland might say a few things, since he also has extremely similar bills.
Okay, thank you. Representative Meekland, would you like to make your comments, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a couple of questions. My first question would be to Representative Hewitt and or the township testifiers. Since the last meeting that we had virtually, and there was obviously a lot of back and forth and a lot of disagreement, has anything since then changed?
Representative Hewitt?
I would turn that to the township testifiers, Madam Chair.
Who would like to? Mr. Fenske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nothing has changed in 30 years. Unfortunately, we keep having these meetings each year. We keep trying to find things that will work, that will be amenable. And that's what we've really tried to do with these bills, not touch the things that cities most use and base it on those criteria I mentioned of there's development needed, there's city services needed or installed, or the landowners want to go. I also want to mention the city groups are represented by several interests. So nobody was excluded that we were aware of. My understanding is the small cities are also represented by the League, and many of them probably also by the Coalition. So, there's so many city groups that kind of take offense to the idea that anybody was excluded. There's so many different city groups that at a certain point, you just need a number in the room and talk. These conversations have been going on for years. This the first time I've heard the small cities have an interest separate from the League or the Coalition to be involved in those discussions.
Okay. Representative Meekland, I see that I have two hands from the testifiers. Are you okay? Do you want to respond to Mr. Fenske or wait till I address the other two testifiers?
Madam Chair, I would like to hear from the other testifiers as well.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Weffel? Identify yourself, please, and proceed.
Elizabeth Weifel, and I am a land use and annexation lobbyist with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And Craig can go into more details, but I just think it's really important to point out that there have been changes negotiated. It hasn't been 30 years without changes. In fact, some of the things they're trying to change in this legislation today were, in fact, things that they had negotiated and agreed to both of the townships and were passed into law, 120-acre provision. And I think the other thing that's important is that I would not characterize the discussions earlier this year as a stakeholder group. If you want to have a stakeholder group, it's really important that sort of, we come in there, both sides are, trying to talk. It's really hard to do via Zoom. We've been willing to have discussions. Again, Craig talked about the discussions we had, spent 2 years working on, changes that we thought we all agreed to with the administrative law judge, and so we have worked hard on finding common ground. And I'm a little troubled by those characterizations. I'm also somewhat troubled by the earlier characterizations of land grabs and this and that. Without specific examples, it's hard to know what they're pointing to, but I think it's really important to recognize, you know, as Kelsey described, that, you know, annexation is done, and it's done for, you know, to deal with population growth. You know, people are wanting to see more housing done, and, you know, that's why these things are done. So I just was really troubled by that. But I'm going to let Craig further talk a little bit more about some of the stakeholder processes.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair and members, I'll be very brief because I mentioned the stakeholder processes during my testimony. But specifically, during recent years, there were substantial changes made in the early 2000s to annexation law. Many, many provisions were amended in some ways during that time period. And due to discussions between the Township Association and city groups, the 120-acre rule that is now in law was amended to fix township concerns. It used to be a 60-acre rule and did not have a time limit on how frequently it could be used. Townships were seeing problems with how that was being done. We worked with them to fix it. Detachments, we also fixed together. Cities were seeing problems with how that was being done, and townships agreed with us to fix that and make it so that the process was a little more thorough, and the townships could object to a detachment if they didn't want the parcel coming back to their township. So we can reach agreement on things, but it needs to be something where there's been some demonstrated need and both sides are capable of fixing it. And I would only just finally echo that a stakeholder process typically involves the interested parties from two sides sitting down and discussing common goals and discussing where there might be common ground and where there isn't. And we have not had that in any recent years. That has not occurred. We have had a meeting hosted by legislators where townships presented their position, and we were asked to respond to it, which I think is a little different than a stakeholder discussion working on policy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Micklin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And this question might for either the author or perhaps Mr. Johnson, but you make reference to in these orderly annexations, in most cases, they're agreed upon by all parties involved, and it goes very smoothly. How many cases have there been in the last 10 years where somebody in the township objected, but in the end they lost, and they ended up getting annexed when they didn't want to?
That was to Mr. Johnson, I think?
Correct.
Okay, Mr. Johnson, proceed, please.
So, Madam Chair, I don't know every detail of every one of those cases. What I do know is that two cases out of the 665 went to a director's order, meaning that they could not be resolved by the parties and were ruled on in the courts, you know, through an administrative law process. It could be that some of the others had a participant that didn't like the outcome. And we do know, for instance, that in court cases, many times one party loses and the other one doesn't like the outcome. So that I don't have the details on. I just have the two that went to a director's order. And then we do know of the case of the Midway Township versus City of Proctor, where property owners were trying to annex into the City of Proctor and were not able to because of an orderly annexation agreement that had been done between Duluth and the township. The Supreme Court ended up ruling that that contract could not block those property owners from petitioning Proctor for annexation. That's the only other one I know of that went to that level, but the property owners were the ones that wanted an annexation in that case.
I see Mr. Kruger has his hand up. Is this to respond to the current question?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yes, Madam Chair, if that's okay. Thank you. I'll take Mr. Johnson's word about the two contested annexation by ordinance that were done by township. As I expressed before, it is very cost prohibitive for townships to object and to try and take this to court and try and fight our way. As I mentioned in that brief summary, that Wyoming Township and Monticello Township back in 2003 was going to cost each of them $175,000. And again, my township is the 14th largest in the state, and we have a levy of $850,000. So you're talking 20 to 25% of our entire budget. And that's for our township. We'd have to spend to fight annexation. and it is extremely cost prohibitive. Regarding Mr. Clem's comments about cities make communities livable, I do take offense to that. Townships are very livable. And to say that cities do it better than townships, I find that offensive. When it's talked about that township residents work in the city, they could. I know, like my nearby city is Elko New Market. They don't have much industry, and they're pretty much a bedroom community. And so there's very few of our township people, if any, that work in the city of Elko New Market. As far as townships receiving emergency services, we pay for those services. And we have a contract with Elko New Market where we pay almost as much as they do for fire protection. So that is all paid for. And we're getting nothing for free. And I'll stand on that. Thank you.
Mr. Fenske, to the same topic here.
To Representative Meeklin's question, we do in our office take calls from townships frequently that are not happy about annexation. Some of them are the 120 acre type, and we tell them, well, the owner wants to go and they have plans there. That's the type that, you know, you may be unhappy with, but it's going to happen and that has to go. The ones that are difficult and that are frustrating are the ones where there's not landowner interest. The property owners object. I believe we've got those going on. Stanchfield Township, I want to say. We've had that in Buffalo Township in the past few years, where the owner, it's just they're surrounded. There's no development plan, or they're the 60% surrounded again. There isn't a plan for that to be developed. There isn't a need for it to go into the city. And again, we're not touching that city power where there's going to be development and the owner wants to go. Those have been mentioned, and we're not proposing a change to that. Okay. So from townships, yes, there are frustrations. It's that they either can't by statute object, or that the people who can object don't want to pay for it. Okay. So no, it doesn't show up in a record because they make the decision. We don't really have much choice but to let it go. Thank you.
Mr. Fenske, is your hand up again, or? Okay. Next, let me get back to, I think I was with Representative Meeklin. Does this answer your question?
And then, Madam Chair, I have another question, if that would be all right.
Okay, that'll be fine, and then we'll take Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question would be for the author of the bill. Perhaps Representative Hewitt can explain to me, what is the difference between House File 4108 versus House File 2282, and what's the difference between House File 4109 versus House File 3383? I mean, what was updated in these redrafts of these bills?
Representative Hewitt.
Representative Meeklin, that's a great question. The stakeholders came to me and asked me to drop these two. I don't know why we didn't use your bills. It would be a good question, but I don't believe there's much difference. Do you see much difference in them? I see Mr. Kruger just came on, but what do you see difference? I would be curious, Representative, what you see different in them, if anything.
Representative Meeklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the question I have is, you know, after we had that meeting, there obviously was a lot of concerns back and forth. So is you know, as I went through them, I was struggling trying to find the differences. Maybe Mr. Kruger or Fenske can answer the question if there was some revisions made based on the meeting that we had with all the concerns that were raised. Maybe one of those two could answer the question.
Mr. Kruger, is it to this question?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Meeklin, the reason for the updraft or the redraft is for the effective date was changed and was made current. That was the reason for it.
Representative Meeklin.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. You know, I think I'm good with all that, and obviously this is a conversation that needs to continue. I've kind of come up with a few ideas, and I guess I'll take those conversations offline. Thank you very much.
Okay. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I had someone here trying to fix a very old stove, so I've been in and out of the meeting, but I had met with the townships ahead of time and I'm somewhat familiar with the Proctor case. Quick question in the Proctor case, remind me, did the judge say that whoever can answer, basically that they had to rule the way they did because the statutes were written that way.
Who would like to take that?
I can take that.
Okay. Ms. Wayfield?
It was, you know, there were several grounds, but that was, you know, they did read the statutes as harmonizing that way, that the statutes did not address that question. You know, and our concern, you know, with that case is that, you know, that in that situation, again, it was landowners and Proctor who wanted to go into Midway, and Proctor never had an opportunity, you know, because the land was so close to each other. You know, Proctor did not have an opportunity to enter into that orderly annexation agreement with Duluth. And so it was a, you know, it was, the case was brought by the property owners.
Okay. Representative Joaquin.
I think Mr. Fenske has his hand up as well.
Mr. Fenske, would you like to,
answer
the question?
The same, yeah. It was a matter of statutory interpretation. It did go to the state Supreme Court, and they felt they had to read the orderly annexation section together with language from another section. And that's what these bills try to separate, saying they don't cross-reference. That's what the language you see here does.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when I met with the townships, I was given a chart, because I'm a visual learner, and it was a very complicated chart of how the different annexation processes work. This seems to be a topic that has been tried to be addressed for years. It feels like it's a topic of feeling like there is maybe an imbalance of power between the two entities. And I'm wondering, and I know people think working groups or task forces are a way to stall questions, but this issue seems to be stalled already and has been stalled for a very long time. So maybe there's some, could be some discussion around putting together a working group over the interim. We had one for the salvage title issue that had been kind of stuck in the muck for a while. It was legislators from both sides being able to call in all the stakeholders to sit down and gather all the information and have that discussion. But I'd like to talk with both all the parties offline to see how something like that could be structured to maybe get more voices to the table and maybe find some means. I know we're not legislative law judges, but maybe just having another set of eyes on it would help. And just a thought I wanted to throw out for the parties to start thinking about. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Mr. Krueger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Joaquin, thank you for that suggestion. We're always open for having good, in good faith negotiations and discussions based on this. We would like to have legislators involved in this process. And because, again, as I mentioned before, this was created by a legislative act, and it is going to take a legislative solution to come to some type of reasonable agreement. But yes, if both parties can come in good faith for negotiations, we're welcome to entertain that.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, this has been a extremely contentious situation. And over the years, the one thing that I've noticed is it's hard when one person has the power in this activity to get a consensus, because when the parties don't agree, they tend to, doesn't matter, we got the power, we're not going to negotiate in good faith to take care of some of the issues. And the one group that I don't think we've got testifying today are some of the diverse property owners that have gone through the process. I've had people contact me, and they didn't want to be annexed in. And the reason why they lived and got a property or moved into an addition that was outside of the city was because they didn't want to be part of the city. And so frankly, hopefully in the future, we can bring more consensus to it. But I think a committee would need to have actual property owners that have been through the process and hear some of the ways that the current process is not functional to them, because we're hearing one local government and another local government, but we're not hearing the people that are truly affected, and that would be the property owners, the citizens that are in the middle. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Joachim, is your hand up again?
Yes, yeah, sorry about that, Madam Chair. I didn't want my words to be misconstrued at all of thinking that the parties are not coming to the table in good faith. I've worked a long time with a lot of these organizations, and they do come to the table in good faith. What I'm really proposing is having a legislative working group that's able to pull in all the folks to give testimony. It was very effective with the Salvage Title Task Force, or working group that Chair Senator Jasinski chaired. There was two members of the Senate, two members of the House of both sides of the aisle appointed. We could make it even bigger, but I think having a legislative working group that is able to gather all the information and hear from all those stakeholders, not only the organizations, but as Representative Quam said, folks that are affected by annexation, would be the best way to go, especially when, as you can see, this sounds like it's a kind of emotionally charged topic as well. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions? Not seeing any. I'm going to suggest that we give some serious consideration to putting together a work group. I know I'll be talking to a few people as well, but if you have any input on that, please give me a call as well. And again, I am not seeing hands up. So thank you, everyone. I know we have spent a lot of time on this topic, but it's quite clear that there are still some issues that need to be resolved.
Chair Mason, can I close?
Oh, of course, Representative Hewitt. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I thought you might be dismissing us before, so I jumped in there real quick. First of all, Madam Chair and members, yes, this is a quite controversial subject. You can tell why a Metro person took the bill. But I'd like to thank Representative Meckland. I know he's been working on this issue, and I know he's going to continue. I want to tell the parties that are here today to proceed and to try to get this settled. Words like legislative, hearing judge or courts, all those things are flags for us to do bills. We look at these things and we go out and we find bills that need to be done. And a lot of times stakeholders get put aside when we have to do bills. And you, the best way to deal with this is with you. You are the ones that should make the decision. And as the chair just said, if it's a blue ribbon group, I know the governor loves those, or whatever, we need to get this done. I mean, regardless how the elections go next time, this will rear its head again in the next session. And I would hate for you guys to come back and try to go through the same thing again. I think you all do well representing your clients and representing people, but when it comes down to it, the people we represent are those property owners, those people that pay the taxes and pay our salaries and stuff like that. And so we have to look at them very closely. So with that, Madam Chair, I appreciate you hearing the bill today. This bill is totally in your control, and I move it forward. Thank you. I think you're muted, Sandy.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Thank you so much for your comments. I am not seeing any hands up. So at this point, House File 4108 is laid over. House File 4109 is laid over. And we stand adjourned. Have a good day.